Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Today is Friday, June 17th, 2022, so let's take a quick preview of the docket. Well, at least one part of the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell trial equation is starting to get ready. Amber Heard just won't stop. Alec Murdoch, former attorney. Why didn't Kim Fox get arrested? An example of why you don't take what doesn't belong to you. Former doctor Larry Nassar, no relief on sentencing by the appellate courts. And then finally, the dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, aficionados. Let's get to the docket. First, Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell. As you know, anytime you have a death penalty trial coming up, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Obviously, the prosecution has a lot of work to do to get their evidence, their witnesses all lined up to be able to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. The defense attorneys have a lot of work to do, not only preparing a defense, preparing cross-examination, any witnesses that they want to call, and then you also have to prepare for the death penalty phase, the mitigation phase, assuming the matter gets there. So all of the parties are rather busy. And it seems like prosecutors are looking for any reason to delay a trial. We know that Lori Vallow's attorneys would like a continuance. We know Chad DeBell's attorney is like, well, let's go, even though January's so far out, but let's do it anyway, anytime. Unless, of course, it's with Lori Vallow. So we have all those issues. But the other equation that you really don't hear about oftentimes in these matters is the preparation for the courthouse. And in this case, obviously, the trial has been moved up to Ada County. And while the Ada County Courthouse and their personnel are preparing for the trial for Lori Vallow and Chad to begin, which is in January of next year. And for those of you who don't know, the couple is charged with murder and conspiracy to commit murder in the deaths of Vallow's children, JJ and Tylee, as well as Chad DeBell's now late wife, Tammy DeBell. The courthouse is preparing for the trial after Judge Boyce ruled that the trial would be moved from Fremont County in eastern Idaho to Boise. Now, DeBell's attorney made the original request for a change of venue, arguing that significant media attention would affect the ability to find a fair and unbiased jury in Fremont County. The judge all but granted that motion, even though the prosecution put up a little bit of a protest. I think they knew the writing was on the wall. Well, another part of the reasoning for the ruling was so that the Ada County jurors would not have to be transported between the two counties for the duration of the anticipated multi-week-long trial. The prosecution requested that theory because they didn't want to be inconvenienced by being on the other side of the state. However, this case is still basically part of the Fremont County jurisdiction. So the Ada County Courthouse is essentially just providing them space and facilities and the local Ada County jurors to get this case completed. Now, while the trial is still several months away, preparations are underway for the courthouse. This includes ensuring that the courthouse facilities accommodate Judge Boyce and his staff that will be traveling to Ada County, and of course, working with the judge and the jury commissioner to ensure that potential jurors are summoned. Now, fortunately, Ada County has a large population, which means a larger pool of potential jurors. And Judge Boyce will have to decide if he wants to do a written questionnaire of jurors in advance. And court staff pointed out how much work it takes to get that questionnaire to thousands of people to fill it out, then get them to fill out the response, and then return it to the judge and the attorneys for review. And because this is a capital case, the attorneys and the judge will have to find out where the potential jurors stand and would weed them out based upon whether they have a strong opinion on that matter. Now, the court expects a large turnout from the media, locally and nationally, so they're trying to figure out exactly where everyone's going to be able to park, and Judge Boyce is working on apparently trying to decide who from the press will be let in to the courthouse. Their next big concern is the defendant, the jurors, the judge, and the witnesses, and that impartiality is maintained to ensure they are not exposed to media sources they shouldn't be exposed to. The actual selection of the jurors in a case like this, all potential jurors will not be together all at once. They'll likely be conducting jury selection in batches over several weeks to weed them out. I've mentioned this before, as I had a case once where there was a lot of publicity. We had a change of venue, and we brought in 600 jurors. and you literally bring them in waves. You have them fill out the questionnaire, which takes time for them to complete it. The judge makes all their introductory remarks. The attorneys then review it. You try to weed out who should be eliminated based upon those particular answers in there, in the questionnaire. And then you bring in the next batch. And then you bring in the people that have made that first screening. And then you try to talk with them to see if they are actually going to be qualified in a very general voir dire. In a capital case, I think it's always ironic that you really talk about the death penalty, the penalty phase, even before you've heard a single fact in the case. Because for the jury to be death qualified, you have to have jurors that are willing to say they will impose the ultimate punishment if they follow the law. You have to get people out of there that will say, I will never impose the death penalty because you're not a qualified juror, because you're saying I'm refusing to follow the law. All right. Remember to please subscribe, like the video if you do, and leave me a comment and hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or post a new video. Amber Heard, she just will not stop. Well, Amber Heard's latest antics includes a bold ultimatum to Johnny Depp this morning before the interview with Savannah Guthrie aired in full on Dateline. Ms. Heard challenged Mr. Depp to do his own TV interview if he had a problem with her repeating her alleged defamatory allegations that he beat her. Heard also revealed via a spokesperson that she has a binder full of therapist notes, which she claims prove her accusations that she was physically and sexually abused. Now, Heard turned over years worth of notes taken by her therapist detailing instances when she alleges the actor hit her, threw her against a wall, and threatened to kill her as part of her new interview with NBC Dateline. Now, the judge already dismissed the notes as hearsay and barred her legal team from submitting the documents as evidence. So now Amber Heard has gone public with the binder dating back to 2011, the very beginning of her and Depp's relationship. According to Savannah Guthrie and Dateline, which was given access to the so-called binder, the notes contain descriptions of violence dating back to January of 2012, when Heard told her therapist, Mr. Depp, that he hit her, threw her on the floor. 8 months after that, he ripped her nightgown, threw her on the bed, and then in 2013, he threw her against a wall and threatened to kill her, according to the notes. Now, despite being found guilty of defamation, Ms. Heard continues to publicly accuse her former spouse of physical and sexual abuse while telling Dateline in the interview that she is not a vindictive person who is trying to seek vengeance against Mr. Depp. Now, Ms. Guthrie also pointed out that the interview that Heard is the only woman to have come forward with these allegations of abuse against Depp, questioning why nobody else would have spoken out if they had endured the same violent treatment that she claims to have had. Ms. Heard replied, look, what happened to me when I came forward? Would you? Now, in a statement given to Dateline, Depp's legal team slammed Ms. Heard for continuing to air her allegations so publicly, even after the trial concluded, saying it's unfortunate that the defendant and her team are back to repeating, reimagining, and relitigating matters that have already been decided by a court and the verdict that was unanimously and unequivocally decided by a jury in Johnny's favor. However, Ms. Heard insists that she will stand by her testimony to her dying day, repeating the language used in the Washington Post op-ed that sparked the marathon six-week trial by describing herself as a survivor. I said this the first day that everything came out, that Ms. Heard needs to shut up. And the reason she needs to shut up is the fact that she can be sued yet again for defamatory statements. And when a jury has already ruled that you have defamed somebody and you go back and do it again, it kind of warrants a little more hefty punitive sanction, perhaps in a jurisdiction that will award more than $350,000. Now, maybe the fact that this is being done is because Mr. Depp has said he wasn't really sure that he was going to collect on the money and he really wasn't about the money. Well, if I was Mr. Depp or his attorneys, I would say, let's go get the money. That's the only thing that's going to stop her. Now, Ms. Heard basically saying that she has all these notes and that's going to prove her case. Well, guess what? This is what I've said before. The only thing that matters is not what you think, what you believe, but what you can prove with legal and competent evidence. The court did not allow in her notebook, as it would be hearsay. I don't know where the doctor was. The doctor could have come and testified. But remember, the doctor oftentimes is simply a note taker. Just because it's on paper doesn't necessarily mean that it is true. Now for Savannah Guthrie. That is probably one of the dumbest questions I think anybody could possibly ever ask. Well, if you're the victim, but yet nobody else has ever been the victim, how does that explain it? Oh my goodness. Could you imagine if I was allowed to bring into court, let's say my client was accused of beating his wife or girlfriend, and I got up and said, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, they didn't bring in any other people to say that my client did anything wrong, therefore she is lying. That doesn't matter in a court of law. It only matters about the allegations brought before the individual. That's it. Oftentimes, clients want to say, but I'm a great guy. Yeah, I'm accused of beating my girlfriend, but bring in my 10 other girlfriends to say I never beat them. Not relevant. Savannah Guthrie, better questions than that next time. All right? Amber Heard, stop it. Stop it. Move along. Maybe he won't come after you for the $8 million that you now owe him. Move along.
Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high-quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked.
Next on the docket, let's talk about Alex Murdoch, now a former attorney. So the Supreme Court of South Carolina issued an order yesterday afternoon outlining its decision to disbar Alex Murdoch pending a hearing. The Supreme Court's decision sent some shockwaves to the legal community, apparently. The Supreme Court made this decision independently without receiving a recommendation from its Office of Disciplinary Counsel. The court decided to forego the investigation into Murdoch's case because they didn't see a need to wait. Now, the Supreme Court Justice Donald W. Beatty wrote, "There is no factual dispute about whether respondent engaged in dishonest conduct. Murdoch has admitted to conduct that amounts to clear and convincing evidence of dishonesty in violation of the rules of professional conduct." Easy enough. In September of 2021, Murdoch was suspended from the practice of law. Since then, he has been indicted on 83 charges relating to stealing more than $8.4 million from his former clients. He was arrested in October and is being held in the Richland County Detention Center on a $7 million bond. Now, according to the order, if Mr. Murdoch wishes to argue the court's decision, he can do so at 11 a.m. on June 22nd in the Supreme Court courtroom. Maybe a little tough for Mr. Murdoch to get a writ there to appear himself, and I'm not sure if his attorneys are going to be included in that. But more than likely, Mr. Murdoch will never practice law ever again. It may be surprising if maybe Mr. Murdoch ever gets out of custody again. And good on the Supreme Court there. Yes, they suspended his license many, many months ago, and good for them just cutting to the chase. If it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, sometimes it's a duck. Kim Fox, remember her? That's right, the DA that was involved, then wasn't involved in the whole Jesse Smollett thing. Well, why is she not arrested? So Kelly Fox, the husband of Kim Fox, called 911 to report a domestic dispute with his wife, Kim Fox. Now, the Cook County State Attorney on June 4th around 10 p.m. The audio has just been released, And Kelly Fox can be heard telling the dispatcher that the dispute is physical. The dispatcher then asks, anyone is hurt, to which Kelly Fox responds, no, not yet. At this point, Kelly Fox can be heard saying, don't touch me. A woman in the background responds with, everybody's touching you, get out. Kelly Fox tells the dispatcher that there are no weapons in the house and that no one has been drinking. An officer responds to the couple's home and found them standing on the front steps. Kelly Fox reportedly told the officer, Kimberly got mad about something that was posted on Facebook that he did. Kelly Fox claims Kim Fox asked him to leave, which he refused. He told the officer that Kim blocked him from leaving a bathroom, grabbed his collar, and threw his video game controller on the ground. Kelly Fox then alleged that Kim Fox slapped him across the left cheek. The officer wrote that he did not observe any indicators to support this claim of being struck. There was no redness or swelling visible on the face. Now, Kim Fox told police that she did put her hands on her husband, but only to guide him out of the house. She denied slapping him and no arrests were made. Now, like I said, Kim Fox is Chicago's top prosecutor and was criticized in 2020 after her office dropped several charges against Jussie Smollett for faking a hate crime. Fox was accused of texting with a former aide to Michelle Obama and a relative of Smollett about the case. A special prosecutor, Dan Webb, who investigated Fox's handling of the Smollett case, found that she lied about having contact with Smollett's sister, but ultimately said that was not enough evidence developed to support any criminal charges against Fox. Fox's office said it respectfully disagreed with Webb's findings of abuse of prosecutorial discretion. Now, we've talked about this before, ladies and gentlemen. If that had been you or I and the police had been called about a domestic dispute, guess what? Somebody would be going to jail. Maybe if you're the top prosecutor, you can get away with that. Now, for the police, fortunately, no one wound up deceased later, like, for example, in the Gabby Petito case, where Brian Laundry ultimately killed Gabby Petito. The police were called and they said, well, we don't really see anything much is going on. She's just a couple having an argument. And don't get me wrong, I don't want people to get arrested, but I just think there's a complete double standard when it comes to elected officials. And frankly, it's just not fair. Lady justice, well, that's right, is to be blind and equal justice for all. But unfortunately, some people are more equal than others, get a few more breaks along the way. Next, this is why you don't touch other people's things. You don't take other people's things. I can remember as a child walking into a store, my mother would remind me just about every time, we look with our eyes. We don't touch. We look with our eyes, not our hands. Don't touch everything in the store. And then she would also say, you keep your hands off of other people's stuff. Well, a good example of that. A thief in Utah was caught on camera drilling into a truck's tank and then partially bursting into flames. The thief pulls into the parking lot in his white pickup next to, ironically, a truck that belongs to a fire protection company. The guy tried to siphon gas out of the truck, but wasn't getting the siphon to work. He then decided to drill directly into the tank. And that's, well, basically when a spark ignited the gas and the burglar caught on fire. Take a look at this footage. It shows the thief under the truck, then suddenly jumping out and running away with his t-shirt ablaze. He then dropped and rolled across the parking lot before his accomplice in the pickup helped him to get back in the truck. It's unclear how injured the thief was or whether he was identified or found. The truck owner said that if there was more gas than just a gallon, the whole thing probably would have turned into a bomb. And he said that the same truck already had its catalytic converter stolen and was previously targeted by gas thieves. He's been forced to upgrade to a $30,000 security system that caught this most recent thief in the act. A Salt Lake City Fire Marshal Division Chief said the crime was part of an alarming trend fueled by gas prices soaring to, obviously, record highs. Unfortunately, given the gas price in the valley and nationwide, we are seeing an increase in gas theft. He stressed that drilling into a tank is hazardous and said that stealing the gas is a meager return for the risk. I have a couple of cases right now in the rural areas of Colorado, and coincidentally, the crime just happens to be theft of gasoline and theft of other people's property. Keep your hands to yourself. It could save your life someday, ladies and gentlemen. Jeez. All right. Next, Dr. Larry Nassar, ex-Dr. Larry Nassar. He's having a bad day. The Michigan Supreme Court has denied Nassar's request for a new sentencing hearing, upholding the decades-long prison sentence the disgraced doctor faced for sexually abusing countless gymnasts under his care. Now, as you may recall, Mr. Nassar pled guilty in November of 2017 to 7 counts of first-degree criminal sexual conduct in connection with his sexual abuse regarding scores of gymnasts while working at the Michigan State University and as a doctor for USA Gymnastics. His victims included top Olympic gymnasts Simone Biles, Michaela Maroney, and Allie Raisman, among others. Ingram County Judge Rose Marie heard victim impact statements from more than 150 survivors of Nassar's abuse. At the time of the sentencing, the judge said, this is the important part, our country doesn't have an eye for an eye and Michigan doesn't have the death penalty. So I don't know how to answer how much is a young girl's life worth, but I have children of my own and there's not enough gold in the planet that would satisfy that question. The judge ultimately sentenced Nassar back in January of 2018 to a prison sentence of a range between 40 to 175 years in prison. Nassar had subsequently requested a resentencing hearing, which the judge denied. Nassar appealed that decision, alleging bias and prejudice on the part of the judge. In a 2-1 majority, the 3-judge panel on Michigan Court of Appeals upheld Nassar's sentence. The majority ruling said that the judge's remarks, particularly those in which she lamented that she could not give Nassar the death penalty, were wholly inappropriate. In its ruling Friday, the Supreme Court similarly acknowledged some of its own misgivings. We share the concern of both the Court of Appeals majority and dissent about the conduct of the sentencing judge in this case and seriously question the majority committed error by affirming the trial court's denial of the defendant's motion for disqualification and a motion for resentencing. However, the justices indicated that Nassar didn't meet the heavy burden required to disqualify a judge. The justices also noted that the sentence was within the agreed upon range of the party's plea and sentencing agreement, and for these reasons, we declined to expend additional judicial resources and further subject the victims in this case to additional trauma, where the question at hand presents nothing more than an academic exercise, the court said. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what you refer to as the SOB rule. And when the defendant, like former Dr. Nassar, who sexually abused so many young women, he's an SOB, all right? And the court said basically, yeah, we're concerned by the language of the sentencing court. Could give the appearance that, well, maybe she was not completely impartial. But hey, it was not an illegal sentence. And basically, any other judge probably would have found the same way. Okay? So although they're a little concerned that maybe the appearance wasn't there, hey, we're done with this, Dr. Nassar, ex-Dr. Nassar. Get on serving your sentence. You're probably going to die in prison. And we're not going to engage in this academic exercise of whether you are going to get a fair hearing. You're entitled to a fair hearing, not a perfect hearing. And I get the judge probably will refrain from making such remarks in future sentencing hearings. Judges have to be concerned about what they say. They cannot go over the top. They're supposed to be umpires calling balls and strikes and then finally saying, this is the ruling. That's it. And that's why we have appellate courts, because when the trial courts forget that they're just an umpire and they become emotionally involved in that case, they really remove themselves from being a judge to being a participant in the proceedings. So good thing the SOB rule came through. Nassar, you're done. Move along. All right. A quick recap of some of our dumb criminals of the week. Monday, Justin Michalowski asked police for a ride home before they let him enter the cruiser. Officers asked if he had anything illegal on him. He then voluntarily emptied out his pocket and removed marijuana and 3 bags of cocaine. Yep, that's dumb. Tuesday, Sashande Dugas, Christopher Alton, and LaDonis Riley were arrested concerning an ATM robbery in Nashville. Riley, who also goes by the rap name 213JugGod, recently released a song on YouTube entitled Make It Home. The lyrics describe robbing ATMs out of state, having thousands of dollars in their vehicle, praying to avoid being caught up in a car chase, and making it home. Yep, that's stupid. Even if it's a lyric in a song, it can be a confession. Wednesday, Corey Lane took his anger out on Coca-Cola vending machine at a Florida motel when the machine dispensed the wrong beverage. He caused $1,500 in damage, and the motel owner said they were going to press charges. That's an expensive soda pop for sure. Thursday, Jinwan Chen charged with 38 counts of reckless endangerment after being blacked out behind the steering wheel while snacking on some gummies that he said he didn't know were infused with THC. That's right, the stuff that makes you high, not CBD, like some people accuse Baked in Colorado of doing. No, it's CBD is the good stuff. THC is the stuff that makes you high, the bad stuff. But I kind of feel sorry for Mr. Chen, I mean, really. And today's dumb criminal, Thomas Colucci, was arrested for giving the police two baggies of methamphetamine and asking them if they could test his stash. Now, Colucci called the police to have them test the drugs he had just bought, saying that he had consumed meth in the past and knows what meth should feel like. This month, Mr. Colucci entered into a pretrial intervention contract that defers his prosecution for possession of meth and drug paraphernalia. The contract requires Colucci to perform 25 hours of community service and pay around $700 in court costs. Additionally, Colucci is prohibited from visiting bars and consuming or possessing illegal drugs, that's right, including meth. He will also be drug tested as well. If he completes his pretrial supervision, the case against him will be dismissed. However, if he were to violate that deferred prosecution / deferred judgment, the terms of the contract, he would be tried on a felony and misdemeanor counts. We wish you luck, Mr. Colucci, but somehow I don't think you're going to be able to do it because, well, when you contact the police to test your meth, you're dumb. Please leave a vote for the dumb criminal of the week in the comments below. We will tally those up and let you know who the winner will be. All right, let's go ahead and close the docket. I hope you enjoyed today's docket. And remember, you can listen to Crime Talk anytime on the go by listening on any of your favorite podcasting apps. That includes Audible, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Spotify. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time.